Hey, cool cats and ladies, M. Night Shyamalan's gotta happen.
You see which guy bursts into her and it's like, hey, you know that thing you thought might be occurring? Well, it's happening.
It's the happening. Skibbity bop bop boot a boot. What?
That?
No.
Yes, that's my favorite.
That's the only part I remember from that movie.
You come here to kill me in my sleep? What? No, we're
no.
not. Here's the only other thing I remember from... Well, two things I remember from that movie. One is...
You never started to care about the Earth.
Yeah. One is that they try to... They never say Zooey Deschanel has cheated on Mark Wahlberg, but the way they intimate it is that she got dessert with a coworker. And you're supposed to be like, that slut.
So maybe they really did just go to a vending machine and get some Twinkies.
She should not have done that.
That's a new. Well, why was she allowed out of the house without her husband as an escort anyway? The other thing I remember is there's some shot where they like really let you see this entire billboard, and it's supposed to be an ad for like a real estate company, but it's also supposed to be a message to everyone like suffering in this moment, where it just says, you deserve this. I saw this in theaters and I cackled out loud just because I was like, we get it, okay? Jesus. Welcome to Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three buddies sit down with a themed cocktail and a very troubled movie and attempt to fix it. I am Chris, finger-licking good Ravel.
I am Lee, the chair, Kelly Hansi.
And I am Brendan. Hello, John. John. Hello, Drishler.
And if you couldn't tell by those choice nicknames, we watched the Supernatural Noir Constantine
movie.
Yes, I'm sorry. Comic book adaptation, Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Keanu Reeves, Rachel Weisz, Tilda Swinton,
Peter Stormare,
Gavin Rossdale,
Digimon Hansu.
Yeah,
Digimon
Hansu.
Digimon.
Digital monsters.
Digimon are the champion.
Okay. Anyway, that was a movie, and we definitely watched it and drank this cocktail. Speaking of cocktails, Brendan, would you like to tell us what the cocktail was we drank?
I sure would, Chris.
I'm so glad.
It's called a Holy Shotgun, and it's made with Tanteo Jalapeno Tequila, Campari, Agave Nectar, some lemon juice, and a little splash of club soda there.
This was a drink, Brendan, you had at a bar.
I had at an airport. Do you guys remember this summer when I was trying to get home to Pittsburgh and I had a layover in New York that ended up being a cancellation and I was stuck in an airport for 6 hours before I figured this out?
For basically the rest of your life?
Yep, yeah. And I drank like three of these while I was waiting. I thought they were very good. It was the only part of the experience I rather enjoyed, and so I decided to try and recreate it.
I eyeballed the proportions, and Brendan said that it was pretty close.
It
so
was pretty close.
I feel good about that.
Yeah, you did a pretty good job, I think.
I know, Brendan, you and I quite liked it.
Yeah, it's very... It is, like, it's spicy. It's not overtly spicy, but there is definitely a kick to it.
It's a crackle.
I had a little bit of the tequila on its own beforehand, and it's very strong smell. Like, it has a very strong jalapeno smell, but it's not a very
awful.
Oh yeah, like as soon as I uncorked it, you could smell the jalapenos like permeating through the air, and it's not that spicy, but it's very jalapeno-y.
Yeah, but we had a dissenter in our midst.
Well, you know,
who was it?
Didn't like it.
Who? Show yourself.
I didn't like it.
What?
I can understand that. I think it's, as I said earlier, it's a challenging cocktail.
It's a very heavy drink. Yeah,
it smells gross.
Your olfactories.
You put your nose up to that, and it's like, whoa.
This will clear out your sinuses, though.
Oh, and it is doing that.
Put hair
right
on your
now.
Chest.
I had.
Yeah, I need more of that.
Me too.
I need more hair on my chest.
I had spicy cheese. I'm good.
I'm a bear.
Okay.
I think you're actually probably closer to an otter than you think, Brevin.
That's all right. I can live with that.
Yeah. So, you know, mixed reviews from the cocktail, but 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
That's right. If our government were 2/3 effective, people would be ecstatic.
Thanks.
But we've got that orange buffoon in the White House right now, am I right?
Thanks, Grandpa.
You're welcome.
Anyway.
Why would your grandpa say that? My grandpa would say that. My grandpa says the Trump supporters catch butterflies in the wintertime.
What, does he really?
Yeah. That's like, which is like an old-timey way of saying they're crazy.
Well, my grandmother is, I guess I should say my grandmother, but she hates Trump so much and can't stop talking about it, and I'm basically living for that.
All of my grandparents died before I was 12.
Would you like to conduct a seance afterward to see what they would think of Donald Trump?
We could. We have
I really
we have multiple
I actually, I really,
that lie.
I would be fascinated to see what someone who died, like, maybe in, like, the early 90s would say to, you know, oh, by the way, President Donald Trump. Like, what would you say at that point? Like, oh, the guy from the Pizza Hut commercial?
Yeah, they would lose their fucking minds.
The guy who gave Kevin McAllister directions in Home Alone 2 Lost in New York?
The guy who replaced all the fixtures on a defunct airline with gold?
Did you know, actually, I just looked this up. Home Alone in France, en français, is called Mom, I Missed the Plane. And the sequel is called Mom, I Missed the Plane Again and I'm Lost in New York.
Wait, the entire title is Mom, I Missed the Plane Again
and
I'm lost in New York.
It's not just, it would be enough to say again because it is a sequel, but they make sure you know he's in New York.
And French is not a brief language.
No, it's that's why I Googled it, because it was a lengthy fucking title and I was like, I recognize like 5 of these words. What are they trying to say? And apparently, that's what they're saying.
Guys,
so what are we doing right now?
Yeah, I don't know. We're just talking about Home Alone 2 Lost in New York.
Thank you so much. I was about to drag us back and I appreciate you doing that, Lee. Lee, could you tell us, could you pull up Wikipedia and let us know, what is the synopsis of this movie we just watched?
Here's the deal. God and Lucifer have this standing wager for the souls of all mankind. Angels and demons are forbidden to appear on Earth. So they're hybrid offspring. And this is now this is what Wikipedia is saying, which is sort of trouncing my theory that this is just a stupid thing.
Well, this is going into, like, Dark Shadows territory of, you know, explaining the movie with things that aren't actually said in the movie.
You know what?
Yes,
we will get into that. But
No, I know. I'm not going to cut off, but I'm just saying there's a lot of Dark Shadows Wikipedia in this where it's like someone is like, oh,
yeah,
this is what it's saying, right?
And it was so clear from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some stuff there because I already looked up this earlier.
Yeah, I was skimming it too.
I don't agree with.
There's a lot of inferences in here.
So these half-breeds are used to influence humans. So this cut to Mexico. We open in Mexico. A scavenger named Manuel finds a spearhead wrapped in a Nazi flag. Didn't catch that detail. At the ruins of an old church. Which is later revealed to be the Spear of Destiny. That's a spear that, I don't know that they talk about it much in the movie, but was it killed?
It didn't kill, he was already dead.
Well,
they did it to test if he was dead.
No, but in the version of this movie, it killed Jesus. They
yeah,
say that
that's
explicitly.
Weird.
Because
yeah.
My understanding is IRL, what it was is
it.
A soldier,
they
like.
They say they have their own reason for
yeah,
what it is.
Yeah.
Well, so it's, I looked this up. We'll get into it later. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, go.
Manuel becomes possessed and begins to make his way to the United States. Exorcist John Constantine. That's not what he is. Exorcist is a Filipina girl possessed by a soldier demon trying to break through the earth. Something that should not be possible under the wager's rules. He meets with an androgynous half-angel being Gabriel Pimentel-Swinton. He asks Gabriel for a reprieve from his impending death from lung cancer derived from cigarette addiction since the age of 15. Gabriel declines, telling Constantine that he exercises demons for selfish reasons and cannot buy his way into heaven. After being assaulted by another demon, Constantine goes to Papa Midnight, a reputed witch doctor who runs a club serving as neutral ground where half-breeds do not have to conceal themselves. Midnight does not believe Constantine's claim of demons crossing over, so Constantine leaves after exchanging hostile words with a half-demon named Balthazar. Elsewhere, a woman named Isabel Dodson commits suicide in a psychiatric hospital. Her twin sister is a detective by the name of Angela Dodson. She refuses to believe that Isabel, who is a devout Catholic, would kill herself. Watching the security footage reveals that Angela hears Isabel saying Constantine's name. Angela finds Constantine and asks him for help to investigate. After they're attacked by winged demons, which Constantine believes were targeting Angela, he agrees to help. Constantine uses a ritual to briefly transport himself to hell through the possession of a familiar. Okay. That's how it went.
Not explained in the movie
and
that way.
And sees Isabel damned to eternally relive her suicide. He briefs his findings to Angela.
I did not get that either. That she was eternally reliving her suicide.
I did.
I saw that she was doing it, but I didn't think that it was like a repeating loop.
This is another
okay.
extrapolation.
Yeah.
He explains to her that he was born with the power to see the true nature of the half-breeds. He attempted suicide to escape his visions, but he was saved by paramedics. However, for the sin of attempting to take his own life, his soul was forever condemned to hell. The two examine Isabel's room in the hospital to find a clue, pointing to a prophecy in the Satanic Bible, which is a Bible that is the hell-based Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get that on
it. I believe they explicitly call it the hell Bible.
And they call
yeah.
it like the hell Bible.
They say
yeah.
like it like Revelations has a different twist in this version
in
of the Bible.
Hell.
Yeah.
That's the pitch.
Elevator pitch, let's go.
Lucifer's son, Mammon, will attempt to claim Earth as his own kingdom. To do so, Mammon requires both a powerful psychic and the assistance from God. Angela tells Constantine that Isabel was clairvoyant and psychic, and was committed by her parents as a result. Angela had the same gift, but suppressed it. At Angela's insistence, Constantine reawakens her psychic ability through a near-death experience. She immediately finds a clue pinpointing Balthazar as an accomplice to the plot. Constantine interrogates Balthazar, who reveals that Mammon has the spear stained with the blood of Christ, the assistance from God. Angela, now the psychic in place of Isabel, is abducted by an invisible entity. Constantine convinces Midnight that the demons are breaking the Ouija's rules. With his help, Constantine finds out how the spear emerged in Angela's location. Constantine arms himself and goes to the hospital, accompanied by his driver and apprentice, Chaz Kramer, played by Shia LaBeouf. First mention of
In
this summary. And he's throughout the movie.
But to be fair, this is the first time he actually really does something.
The two fight their way through an army of half-demons and exorcise a possessed Angela. However, Chaz is killed by the invisible entity, which turns out to be Gabriel. Resenting God's favoritism towards humans, Gabriel plans to unleash hell on earth to weed out these damned unworthy of God's love.
That's how it is.
Gabriel, I know. Yeah. Gabriel casts Constantine from the room and prepares to use the spear to cut Mammon free from Angela. Out of options, Constantine slits his wrist and commits suicide. As he bleeds out, Lucifer arrives to personally collect his soul. Constantine tells Lucifer of Mammon's plan to usurp his knowledge. Lucifer easily overpowers Gabriel, burns Gabriel's wings, and banishes Mammon. In return for his help, Lucifer grants Constantine any wish, and he chooses to ask that Isabel be released from hell and allowed to go to heaven. Lucifer complies, but then realizes that he cannot take Constantine to hell as a consequence because Constantine has selflessly sacrificed himself and gained himself entry to heaven. Infuriated, Lucifer heals Constantine's injuries and cures him of his lung cancer, hoping that he'll eventually make a mistake and damn himself again. Angela and Constantine depart, leaving the now-human Gabriel. Sometime later, Constantine, now making an effort to quit smoking, entrusts the spear to Angela and visits Chaz's grave, where Chaz appears in an angelic form and flies away.
Oh.
All right.
Angel LaBeouf.
So, by the way, Lee, thank you so much for putting up with our little interjections.
Yeah. Also, can we do it real quick? Can we just mention some things that were said in that synopsis that we do not think are legit?
I'm gonna do that right now.
Yeah, okay.
Please
so, let's go.
So,
go ahead, Lee.
Alright, everything about Gabriel's motives is pretty wrong.
Right.
Gabriel specifically says...
He thinks this is humanity's best hope. He loves that.
But the one aspect I did pick up on, and this might kind of get into something here, but that Gabriel is somewhat jealous of God's love for humans.
No. That's absolutely
not... Yeah, because what Gabriel explicitly says is that, like, humans are their best when they're suffering. Like, that's how they become better. Like, they overcome this.
He does a star man.
Yeah.
Shall I tell you what I find most beautiful?
Yeah,
But instead of it being a beautiful lie...
Yeah, it's a horrible...
It's a horrible, like... You're at your best when you're suffering.
Yeah,
you're
so
bring fire and death upon you all.
That's an amazing Tilda Swinton impression you're doing.
I just have to take that on the road.
God, what else was in there that was wrong?
I don't know how much about the spear is correct. The near-death experience is so yeah.
Well,
they're describing
just underexplained.
I don't know that Constantine did that to her to make her psychic again.
I think so too.
He did that to her, so
she wanted to see
hell.
Yeah,
she needed to go see her sister for some reason.
Yeah,
I don't remember
what she just wanted to or some shit. I don't know.
I think it was. First of all, we just need to say Angela as maybe Rachel Weisz. It's almost like a flat earth atheist, and that even when she is shown visual proof that this shit is happening, she's still like, I don't believe it.
Well, she
I think that was part of it, right? Where she was like,
no.
You saw my sister in hell? I don't know about that.
No.
I don't know. It wasn't what they're saying it is.
Yeah, but I don't remember it was a dumb arbitrary reason that made no sense, but nonetheless, he did do
it. He was drowning her in a bathtub.
Yeah. And that, I guess she also, like, acknowledges her psychic powers again, but she does not become psychic
because
by being dunked into a bathtub.
No.
Also,
I think... The reawakening of those psychic powers is a byproduct of whatever they were doing there. And also, water seems to be a thing with...
But not necessary.
Yeah.
So, the first bit about how he goes to hell implies that he was possessing the cat, which, and that the cat is
familiar.
Yeah.
A familiar? No.
Bullshit.
It's straight bullshit. He holds the cat and looks into its eyes. I would say he uses the cat as like an item to focus on.
What we sort of came to is that he was looking at items that belong to Angela's sister, Isabel, and so he just like settled on the cat as an item to sort of get a feel for.
He throws out a comment before he does so, like, oh, cats are great. They have one foot on the other side.
Half in, half out. Which is why all cats are evil.
Cats are like,
that's what we're like.
Evil, but are they like,
they're in hell. Sure.
Well, remember that cat that can smell when people are dying?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
So there is,
that proves it.
There is a real world precedence for this. You're right.
I think it was after this movie, but no.
Is there any other things we want to correct here? And to our listeners, I apologize, but this Wikipedia summary was just...
No, I don't think there's an apology here at all. I think, if anything, this demonstrates how vague a lot of the movie actually is.
Yeah, I think what we can immediately transition into is how you have to make shit up to explain what is happening.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
You're like, well, I guess he looks into a cat's eyes and he's in hell.
So that is a great place to start. And I think where we see that problem come up the most acutely is in... the villain, I'm putting that in quotes, plan. So if we're assuming in this movie that Gabriel is the villain that has sort of masterminded the events of this movie.
Well, Gabriel and Mammon. Mammon? How do you say it? Mammon?
Mammon.
Yeah, Mammon. Mammon is like
Mammon.
French for mother.
Mammon!
Yeah. Mammon! I missed the plane again. Anyway.
And I'm lost in New York.
Yes.
But the villain's plan in this, well, I almost think Mammon's almost like a MacGuffin.
No, the
secondary
spear.
To the spear.
The spear is a MacGuffin. Mammon is just a villain with no screen time.
That's true.
Because Mammon is clearly like
we
in cahoots with Gabriel.
We've never seen Mammon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
no, the only time you see him is in the reflection. Like whenever Satan is holding Rachel Weisz, and then like you look down, you see the water in his reflection,
like,
and there's like a CGI demon like.
Oh.
It's really weird. You don't get a clue.
It looks like a soldier demon just upgraded.
Yeah.
Yeah, and why would the son of the devil look like such a scrub?
No, I know, right? Why is he so boring looking?
Yeah.
So the villain's plan here, can anyone give me a simple point-by-point thread of what Gabriel's plan was?
I don't think it's so much that...
Go ahead.
...plan. I think the problem is the contrivance of this ritual. Like, it's not like... The plan is just... steps to accomplish this bizarre series of events.
Which are?
So in the movie, what they're proposing, they say it, that like, you need step one, a powerful psychic, which is really weird and dumb.
Yeah.
Which is either Isabel or Angela.
In this case,
both
played
by Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
And step two, you need the assistance from God.
Right.
Which they're saying specifically, and they show it in the book, there's a picture of like a...
It looks like Gabriel.
Yeah, it looks like Gabriel.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Well, but they,
holding, yeah.
But they also... Not to put this in, but I researched this a little. They specifically modeled that vision of Gabriel on a specific painting, which they then replicated for the movie, for that image.
The androgynous look?
The androgynous look, but specifically like the chin-length curls.
Oh, I assume that's just what Tilda Swinton showed up wearing, and they were like, yeah, sure, go with it.
So, I mean, we can get into that later, but Tilda Swinton was sort of the perfect choice for this role.
But yeah, they actually show, like, yeah, you need... This you need to cut Mammon out of the you need
the
to
psychic,
Mammon
yeah.
needs to possess the psychic, and then an angel slash god needs to cut Mammon out.
Put this out.
Well, see, okay, I'm sorry, real quick. So I don't know if it has to be an angel or god to cut Mammon out, because like it's the spear. You just need the spear. So in theory, anyone could do it.
Anyone could do it, but I think Gabriel was uniquely positioned to know about this whole deal and be like, okay, I can manufacture.
How is he uniquely positioned?
As a half-breed. As someone who's already like attuned to this crazy world.
That's a whole other question. Is if we are to assume...
Well, then every half-breed would be uniquely positioned. Why is Gabriel...
Yes. And so my other question, so my assumption when I first watched this for the first time is that the Tilda Swinton Gabriel is the angel Gabriel from the Bible. Apparently in the comics, it is supposed to be the angel Gabriel from the Bible.
Why did they change that for the movie?
I don't know.
No,
because they went with this whole like that's not.
Yeah.
A
so why is the yeah?
Thing,
why is the angel
thing.
A half breed? How can Angel Gabriel be a half breed?
Well, because it implies something that is not bared through in the movie, and it implies that Balthazar, the demon half breed, and Gabriel, the angel half breed, are children of an angel and or demon having sex with a human?
It sort of implies that, but again, this is why I for a second thought that, like, half-breed is just an ignorant term Keanu Reeves is using to describe, like,
lesser,
low-level
yeah.
angels and demons. So, this is not a thing, as far as I know, in the DC Comics. I think in the DC Comics, demons can come to
yeah.
her, and angels
yeah.
can come to her.
Which, and again...
Why change that in the movie?
Well,
and
again,
that's a bad choice.
If we are to assume that this Gabriel is the angel Gabriel from the Bible, where in the Bible is there scriptural precedent for the angel Gabriel being a half-breed? How could the angel Gabriel be a half-breed?
He's specifically
yeah.
not the same Gabriel as the archangel.
But that's...
is he?
But
I honestly don't know.
No, but that's my humongous question is...
I assumed it was.
I did as well, but Wikipedia is telling us differently?
I don't know.
although it's a flawed summary, right? But if we take it just as a movie without the background of the comic...
All right.
What the movie tells us is they're half-breeds.
Yes,
right.
The movie cannot
okay.
conclude from that word that Gabriel is the Archangel Gabriel.
So then
even
my other...
that would make the most sense.
The other thing is something, Lee, you had brought up when we were watching this again now, is how do they ever, like, create half-breeds in the
yeah,
first place?
How do they,
yes!
If angels and demons can't come to Earth,
yeah.
how did they fuck a person
well,
and make a half-breed?
I mean, we can talk about Old Testament. We can talk about Nephilim.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Are we going to talk about Nephilim?
No, but...
are we going to talk about Nephilim?
Well,
guys,
yeah,
are we gonna talk about Nephilim?
I don't think we are, honestly, because this movie only wants to indulge
no, that's fine.
In Christian mythology insofar as it serves its plot.
No,
yeah.
it's a very amateurish approach about all this stuff. But my bigger point about this ritual is, if you are God and you are really good and all powerful, why would you leave some sort of loophole that, like... you can allow the devil's son to come
yeah.
to Earth.
So isn't that
as long as you participate in some
yeah,
way?
Yeah, somebody decide that there's a ritual that requires your assistance?
Yeah,
isn't that sort
of something you'd be down
yeah.
to do?
Isn't that sort of an amazing catch 22? I was thinking about this, and I thought that we could only project onto perfect beings as humans, imperfect beings, to decide. Well, of course, God is going to have our same flaws.
Well, that's
also,
yeah.
I wondered this too. Is there a precedent in the biblical times for a psychic?
Yeah, the Witch of Endor.
What?
I'm not
it
making
like a
that
Star
up.
Wars thing.
It does, but that's
it
because
really does.
Endor was a biblical
yeah.
term that was used for Star Wars. But yes, there are precedents for, like, what you might consider to be psychic activity.
So I have to be honest with you, Brendan. I never heard of the Witch of Endor.
Well, give it a good Google.
We can talk about fixes and when it's time for fixes.
Yeah.
But I think that you could have easily used different language. And instead of it being the assistance of Christ, the Spear of Destiny could have been uniquely positioned to be useful because it was a time when God was man. I don't know.
Or Jesus was man.
Yeah,
well,
Jesus,
three in
like,
one.
Yeah, but the Holy Spirit, right?
Yeah.
Like, isn't there divinity in Jesus? So
yes.
It was a sort of moment when divinity and mortality were sort of in one form.
Vessel.
And so that spear might have
Oreo.
Divine energy in it, right? Like, residual divine energy. And so it's uniquely positioned as an artifact to, like... have divine power.
Yeah.
Able
which
to
is make, which is a neat idea.
So then
yeah.
the villain's plan, can we sum that up concisely?
Well, she did.
Yeah, you have to find a psychic,
yeah.
possess the psychic, and then you have to use
the goal.
Which by the way, that is a very simple one. But as it presents in the movie, it seems to touch and involve so many
well,
other
see,
characters.
What are you,
so look,
what are you calling the villain? Are you calling Mammon the villain or are you calling Gabriel the villain?
I'm deciding in this case that Gabriel is the villain because that was the entity creating a plan here.
So,
okay.
the plan, that is the plan. There's
yeah.
also his motivations, which are more weird.
Yeah.
Okay,
the problem that I think you're having, Chris, is it's a very circuitous roundabout way to get this plan into motion.
Yes.
They do so many side tasks that do not matter when all Gabriel really needed to do, as we see, was pick up Rachel Weisz, drag her out of a building, kidnap her, bada bing, bada boom,
take
you got
her
your
to
psychic.
Mexico.
Yeah, that's
well,
all you had to
but
do.
Yeah, but except she wasn't psychic until that thing happened.
She was. She just suppressed
so
it.
She suppressed
and
it.
I cannot imagine.
So taking a bath.
True.
Made her psychic again.
Explained enough where it's like,
yeah.
I just stopped seeing them one day.
Yeah.
Also, the way that
yeah,
it is.
All I got, fellas.
That Wikipedia.
Could you imagine Keanu Reeves and John Constantine being like, fuck, that's all I had to do.
Just stop.
It's just like, stops.
One day I was like, no.
By the way that Wikipedia article makes it seem as if it was there and then she suppressed it and it was functionally gone, but then it came back, the way it read to me in the movie was that she always had it but denied it.
No, she definitely says she stopped seeing things.
Right, but I'm saying that was more like a personal thing. Like, it didn't stop existing.
Well, it did, because, like, I think she would have still seen shit.
I mean, it's like a spigot or something. She can just turn it off when she wants to.
Yeah, I guess.
She did do something. Like,
all right,
like maybe, I guess, yeah, maybe it was just such a, like, a hard case of denial that eventually it just, like, blocked everything out.
The crazy thing to me about that is it's very circuitous. Yes, absolutely, Brandon. It's extremely circuitous. But the thing that bugs me about it is it almost reads as padding to me in the movie.
It is.
Like, well, we have a feature-length run. We need to have other elements in the mix. Because then I look at this and I'm like, our way into this is, yes, it's Angela's sister Isabel being killed. But the thing that drives me crazy here is our way into this is not only that suicide, but also the death of two of Constantine's, like, helpers, Beeman and Hennessy.
Yeah, like, I guess it's, like, I don't know if it's, like, revenge or why not, because, like, they already have given the useful information.
Yeah.
No, but here's the deal. Why were they necessary to die in that situation?
Well, because
I assume it's just
needed to fire up his ass.
Yeah.
I guess
it's to motivate him.
But Gabriel doesn't want Constantine getting in on this.
But I guess Gabriel needs to cut down any possible assistance that Constantine could still get.
But I cannot imagine Gabriel did not foresee the possibility this would only draw Constantine in. Unless Gabriel made some kind of crazy determination that no way Constantine can stop me.
I sort of see what you're getting at, because, like, they've already served their purpose, so why kill them?
Yes.
Especially when the death is coming anyways, but, like, demons be demons, Bram.
But
because Balthazar's the one that kills them.
Yeah.
At the behest of Gabriel, it's implied.
No, but
because Balthazar
not,
says when he's dying, like, I did all you asked.
No, he's not talking to Gabriel.
He says, yeah,
he
when
is.
He's dying, he is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
yes.
That's the, a shadowy figure
so
walks
don't you
in.
Remember that it's like the sound of wings,
yeah.
And then he's like, I did all you asked. And that's the sound of
well,
wings again, and then
like,
he snatches Angela away.
See, I thought he was talking about how, like, what he had to do was bring Angela to him.
By the way,
to bring
that
to
made
him.
No fucking
no,
sense.
Didn't. So look, here was my point that I was trying to get. Here's my point that I was trying to get in beforehand. I don't usually take notes during movies. I took one note for this one. And because what I had said is Mammon's plan to kill one psychic sister to get in another psychic sister. Why doesn't he just use the original psychic sister who people already think is crazy? Who made the video of her committing suicide, say Constantine? Was it Mammon? Did he do that to try and like
a dirty video?
No, because she says Constantine, and then she rewinds it, and she doesn't say Constantine that time.
Right.
So, like, someone supernatural did it. Who was it? Was it Gabriel? Was it Mammon? Was this part of the plan?
It might have been...
I'm going to put this
Angela's
forward.
Angela's latent psychic.
Yeah, that's true, too. Like, it could be any of these things.
I'm going to put this forward. I don't think they thought about it when they wrote this.
Well, sure, probably not. But, like, it's just, why... Okay, like, why is the other psychic sister in this movie in the first place? What do we get from having another sister?
It's fucking unnecessary. It's an extra obstacle that just stands in the way of clarity and simplicity in this movie.
Well,
and I feel like it goes to the idea that they had to pad this fucking movie out.
Let me start from the reverse here.
Yeah.
If there wasn't the psychic sister
mm-hmm.
that died in the beginning, what sparks the investigation in the first place?
I mean, anything.
Anything. You could invent
like, what
anything.
Specific investigation mean?
Okay.
You can actually... You can
let
actually...
me answer my own question.
Yeah.
Perhaps Angela is being hunted by demons.
Yeah, there
yes.
you go.
There you are.
So...
She sees a
she
demon.
She sees a
you're
demon.
Saying, so you're saying,
yeah.
like, instead of there being... I don't know that it's necessarily... I don't know that you've immediately gone afoul by having a twin sister plot.
No,
I
just
it,
think it's...
Let me propose...
It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Let me propose what it could have offered this movie.
Yeah, sure.
Is a dual protagonist line where each protagonist gets an arc. Because I think there's an arc for Constantine, who starts the movie dying and knowing he's going to hell and not really being sure how to clear up his life, as it
yeah.
were. And you start with Angela... in a position where she's denied her true self for all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's a lot of guilt because her sister hasn't and suffered for it. And she wasn't there to back up her sister. And I think that there were two potentially strong arcs to build there. And so that these two characters could evolve, but they were both flubbed.
Yeah,
they're both
fair.
Flubbed. And to the point where I would even argue Constantine barely has an arc in this movie for being the main character.
I would agree, but I am telling you that the purpose of me telling you this was to say that you don't need to, it's not necessarily like immediately as when you have twin sisters that it was a bad decision. There were things you could have done with it that were not.
No,
done.
Yeah, but I'm saying also, like, if you have this movie as is, why at no point in the script writing process did they not just think to simplify it and remove
well, yeah,
sister?
I mean, there were ways to do this without a twin sister.
Yeah, there are ways to do it with a twin sister.
It's
yeah.
extremely messy storytelling is what I would say that you don't need the twin sister for. I feel like this segues pretty naturally into the idea of... There is this wager between heaven and hell. What are the rules of this wager?
So the thing that I always appreciate about that, Tanner used to explain to Rachel Weisz, and he's like, there's a wager for all the souls of mankind between Lucifer and God. And she says, like, why? And he goes, I don't know. Doesn't matter. Like, he basically said, yeah, just like maybe just for fun. He says, I don't know. But like, we never explicitly get what the point of this is, except maybe who gets the most souls. Like, is it just hungry, hungry hippos? We're trying to get the most marbles.
I'm sort of okay with that to the degree that, okay, so this movie, I think it should also be said, is very much modeling its heaven versus hell mythology very much in Catholicism. And that especially holds the idea that we cannot know the workings of God or the devil because they're beyond our conceptions of morality.
Yeah,
As an agnostic, I have difficulties with that. But I would say, I think that was kind of an interesting touch to have the hero be like, that's beyond us. This is just what we're experiencing.
Well, I would argue that that's not really the rule, the tack that he's taking. I think he's taking the stance that they don't give a shit about us.
So they're indifferent.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's what Constantine says. And I also would like to talk for a second, want to dwell on it, about that this is a distinct deviation. I don't know a whole lot about the Constantine comics. I know a lot about moderately a lot about Lucifer because I watched Lucifer,
the TV show.
Yeah. And Lucifer in DC shares the same universe as Constantine. And
oh, I didn't realize.
Well,
that.
It's DC.
It's
so,
DC.
Yeah.
They're both DC comics.
Did not realize.
Yeah.
And so in Constantine, in the DC hell, Lucifer is not the ruler of hell, and is not Satan.
Well, because he gave up the rulership of hell to Morpheus in The Sandman.
Well, yeah, but it's also called the, it's not really more, I don't know about that, but he's called it the first of the fallen, and he's like, Satan as we all think he is, like an evil, like, conniving, like, devil man.
Sex machine.
Whereas Lucifer is just this sort of like, his whole MO in the Constantine, in the DC verse is like, I just don't want to be here anymore. I want to be out, I don't want to be with creation, I'm done with it.
Right.
And so, the tack that they've taken in this movie is this, like, very hackneyed, like, the devil is Lucifer and wants to, like, should prove to his dad that, like, he's better. I don't know. It's like, it is a very hackneyed dichotomy.
Yes.
And
yeah.
It's done very, I mean, the only saving grace of it is that Lucifer is
Peter Stormare.
Peter Stormare. Like,
and guys, we're going to get
into it.
Don't worry.
By Peter Stormare.
Yeah.
But I would like to say this. They specifically call this arrangement out as a wager, which in my approach to that word means there's specific rules, but we're not given
Well, we know
rules.
The rules are that they don't directly interfere, Lucifer and God.
But they
and
do, like, repeatedly.
How?
No.
Balthazar, absolutely.
Balthazar is a demon.
No, but he's still bound by those rules.
No, he's bound. No,
he's,
Lucifer.
He's the one that can do stuff.
Yeah.
He's following the rules.
Yeah, Lucifer and God can't do anything.
I thought it was
the half-breeds
and their minions.
No, the half-breeds can. The half-breeds have a very small area where they can navigate because he says something like, if they overstep their bounds, I deport them to hell. So it's like he says that the demons can whisper bad things to you and the angels can whisper good things to you and it's up to you what you decide to do. It's when they overstep that boundary that Constantine gets involved.
Yeah, when they take
so
over your body.
In this case, then, the half-breeds are just not subject to these rules?
They're not.
No.
They are. They're following
Yeah,
the
those
rules.
Are.
They
have a different
whisper.
Set of...
I mean, barely. I'm just going to put this out there. Hennessy would not have died if Balthazar had not stepped in and made him think he was not able to drink that much
alcohol. I think we were seeing influence in action. I think we were seeing him be like...
I'm saying, though, that is a very loose interpretation of influence.
Well, and again...
To the point where he... Kind of,
but also,
and again,
but also they were breaking those rules.
Yeah, I was gonna say, in the end, he sends Balthazar. He kills Balthazar. So, clearly, Balthazar was overstepping his boundary. There were repercussions. He died.
Yeah. So, back to your point, though, I think you're talking about the rules, but I think what is distinct from the rules is the win condition of this wager, which is also not really specified.
Yeah,
it's just
not
sort of
at
like,
all.
Up until I don't know, end of the world maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
What do you get?
That?
What do you get when you win?
Yeah, when is it? When
yeah,
it, like
what
is it
there?
but
great question.
But yeah, what you're so the rules are basically, humans do what they do, and the angels half-breeds and the demon half-breeds can try to convince you to do the good things and the bad things.
And those souls, you know, and if they do bad things, their soul goes to hell, the devil gets one. If they do good things, they go to heaven, God gets one.
It's just so frustrating, because you'd think in that situation they would even kind of try to subvert the idea of what is good and what is bad, and they seem to vacillate between this very rigid idea of that and a more flexible idea. I find that to be frustrating.
No, morality in DC is much more nuanced than it is in this movie.
Yeah, no, this is a very simplistic view.
It's simplistic, but to its detriment, to the point where
presents
you with things...
Well, yeah, I mean...
Simplistic in general, like, simplistic view of morality in general is always to the detriment of something.
But I also mean just within the actions that happens within this movie that are rewarded or penalized in this absolute way don't fit.
One of the things I was talking about with Brendan was how it was my big sticking point was how Gabriel keeps hammering home that, like,
oh yeah,
because you know that you need to, that you're gonna go to hell and that, like, you have to redeem yourself, like, everything that you've been doing to try to get into heaven is actually selfish, it's not selfless. And I'm like, well, how can, if you know that there's this axe waiting to come down on your head, how can any action be truly considered selfless?
Even...
I was really struggling.
Yeah, no, you, and I get
that,
it. I get it.
Playing off of that, he's aware of the axis of morality by which everyone is being judged.
Yeah.
Does that not inherently corrupt his motivation?
I know,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how can he... it's like some sort of awful Catch-22 where Gabriel's like, you gotta try harder. It's like, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't, because he already has the knowledge that corrupts that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the fucked up root of
and
this
movie. And she actually
said,
but she actually does say, like, you fucked.
Yeah.
They actually say.
I know.
No, after the script uses key. Yeah.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, I looked.
Okay.
The other thing that they brought up during that conversation that you mentioned, well, we talked about briefly, the idea of Gabriel says in order for Constantine to go to heaven, he has to have faith in God. And he's like, I do. And he's like, no, you know, you don't believe.
That's what I thought was an interesting concept.
It's a potentially interesting idea.
Which gets thrown away immediately after.
Immediately. And I also thought the other thing, but I guess it sets up the end, is that Gabriel says, like, you have to commit self-sacrifice. I don't know that Constantine really does self-sacrifice. He just decides, my kudos is going to go to someone else.
He did it, though. He did it. He said, give Isabel back to heaven.
Yeah.
And that could have worked better than it did.
Agreed.
Other idea that I think is interesting that is thrown away is the idea that Beeman at one point...
Beeman
like,
being one of his assistants.
Yeah, just because you don't have faith doesn't mean that we don't have faith in you. And then he dies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's an interesting idea. And then later on, Midnight is also praying for Constantine, even when Constantine says, like, why bother? It's, like, a stupid foregone conclusion. And I was like, it would be an interesting concept that, like, it is not God that redeems Constantine, but the people.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, he is not, it's not on God to, like, forgive Constantine.
Well, let me
it's
ask
on
you,
the people to, like...
Let me ask you something, Lee. Does the movie explore that aspect
no.
at all?
Well, no, of course not.
But it was,
but,
you know, something I saw.
It's a neat,
like,
throwaway concept.
This sort of kind of leans into the idea of the theme and tone of this movie, which I would argue are very much intertwined.
Yeah, I think we've almost been... I realized that's what I wanted to talk about when I gave you that topic.
Yes.
We're in it.
Okay.
Shit.
But that's where I want to place that marker in.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about the rules. We're talking about kind of the ideas at work here. But let's do that a little more explicitly in terms of...
So take off our pants.
I mean, you know, I love to talk about movies which are basically supernatural, biblical, noir with my pants off.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, I'm going to start with Lee. How would you describe the theme of this movie?
The arc of this movie, which is a solid arc to have chosen for if you could only do one Constantine movie.
On paper,
is that Constantine starts off thinking that, like, you know, he starts off as a sort of without a moral compass. Like, he knows he's going to hell. He figures, like, the game is rigged against him, and there's why bother being good or evil or anything like that. And I think that he learns the value of being truly, like, altruistically good. But that's the should. That's
yeah.
not
No. And I agree with you. I think that on paper, like, if you were to do an outline of this movie and you would read that outline, you would be like, oh, this is what's happening here.
Yeah. And I think what crystallizes that in the plot is the fact that he is dying. Like,
yeah.
That comes that... That makes those thoughts come to the forefront, makes him actually confront those things.
Yeah.
But I think it started off with that promise Promise.
Yeah.
And it doesn't deliver.
Promise. So then, do you guys think that the tone really bared that through? Or even the actions of this movie bared that idea through?
No, because it's a very meandering movie. It's almost episodic in points, where you have a lot of side quests that don't really lead to the big thing at the end.
You also said that it's like sprinting to catch up to the plot.
Yeah, no, at a certain point, like, yeah, around the time I think that Beeman dies,
yeah,
charging to the end to get to the point where they can set this up.
So my
critical plot where he gets killed.
Takeaway was...
Because almost nothing happens important to the plot prior to Beeman dying.
So my feeling... when I watched this movie was, wow, Act 1 and Act 3 both have very solid foundations in terms of this is what's up, this is what we're thinking, this is where you begin and end. The middle, it was a complete fall.
I would say the first 10 pages. I wouldn't even say Act 1. I would say the first 10 pages have a solid starting point, and it immediately starts to get muddled.
Yes, I agree with that.
Every time you come to that Mexican guy.
Yeah.
Forget that guy, man. What
the Mexican
fuck is
guy,
doing?
But
what with that guy?
Well, because it's his whole meandering trek from Mexico to America.
Also, why
is this so?
He's basically a vessel for the spear.
Yeah. Why was
every moment we've had to try to spice things up also gets quieted immediately? Like you go to Midnight's bowling alley / club.
No, Midnight's is a club.
Sorry,
Constantine and Beeman apparently live in the same bowling alley,
which
we did not figure out until very late in the game that they're basically building mates.
Well, because you only find that out when almost the end of the movie.
Yeah, very near the end.
Back home, you go to the bowling alley.
Yeah.
Okay. But in Midnight's club, it's this idea that it's this neutral ground where both. The demonically inclined and the angelically inclined are going to hang out in the same place and do their thing, and no one's going to fight, and that's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
What I found confusing about that is it's not fucking explained, and Dijman Hansu is so fucking flat in this movie.
Well, I think it's explained in the sense that you understand that those are the rules. They state many times... this is neutral territory. He says, you're being Switzerland, blah, 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 blah. So, what this club is. You don't know any of the reasons why, per se, but you know that this is the rule here.
Yeah.
And
I don't have any problem accepting that.
If you are a demon half-breed or an angel half-breed and your whole purpose is to fuck up the other side, why would you ever want to have a drink with them?
I know. Why wouldn't you just have your own nightclub?
Yeah. That is my ultimate question. What is the point of this place if you guys are both absolutely against each other?
Yeah. I had said when we were watching this how it reminded me of Men in Black a little bit.
Yeah.
And if it were more of a thing where we're just here on the earth, some of the demons just want to hang out up here. Maybe they just want to get away for a while. And maybe some of the demons are actively trying to bring the downfall of humanity. But I could see it then being a place where, sometimes we all just like to get together and relax a little bit.
But you don't see them interacting. You actually see them doing their separate things.
Yeah, you do.
And they even specifically drive home the idea that they're at constantly cross purposes, even when they're not full demon or full angel.
Yeah.
And I to Brendan's point, I think that in DC, there are more diverse,
which is more interesting,
cast of characters.
Yeah.
But I think this movie is just I don't know, angels are good.
Yeah, demons are bad. That's it. Black and white. Let's go.
In my research, I found that this was kind of combining two or three different storylines within the Hellblazer comic, which this is based on.
Oof. Sorry, I'm just realizing that Peter Stormare is actually credited as Lucifer Morningstar, which is
the character.
Name. That sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks for actual Lucifer Morningstar.
Actual?
Yeah.
As someone who believes.
No, I'm just listen, I've got Lucifer on the brain. It's another strike on
the character as he exists.
The character as he exists in DC would be this is awful.
Yeah.
What a great word to go on. Let's talk about characters in this movie.
I feel
like this is going to be our lightning round because I would like to just say characters are sketched out and little else in this movie.
Keanu Reeves,
Beeman,
they're all very thin.
Logline of Beeman, he's some sort of eccentric collector of things.
He loves bugs.
He loves bugs.
Well, both...
Which we know because he says he loves bugs.
He's a nerd.
Well, both Beeman, who dies with flies and bees flying out of his mouth, but also Hennessy, the defrocked priest with psychic abilities to get the emotional...
I think he scries.
That was my best guess, too. But to be fair, when you said that, I was like, okay, that would make sense. The first time I saw it, I was legitimately like, was he blind this whole time? And I did not realize
it. That would make a lot of sense.
Because they show him, feeling newspapers with his hands and hearing voices in his head, and I was legitimately like, wait, did I miss something? And he wasn't really looking at him all this time. It was like fucking 88 minutes with Lili Sobieski.
Lili Sobieski.
Yeah.
Well, but it's also like,
did you slide the gun to me?
You were so willing to be a lot more forgiving for that movie at that time, to be like, oh, they're doing something here where they're literalizing what he's like.
Well, it wasn't even that. I was confused trying to like catch up to the movie. I wasn't like being like, ooh, this is fun. I was like, oh, is this what it is?
Well, but I actually think both of their death scenes were kind of cool and interesting, except for that when you realize Beeman dies because bugs basically kill him.
Well,
but then,
I thought it was the same bug demon from earlier.
But then, I don't think it is.
I don't know.
But then Hennessy dies, and Hennessy, being also a liquor, dies because he perceives himself to be drowning in liquor.
Well, see, this is what I can't tell, right? So what he does is he tries to drink. He can't drink. And then he just burbles out liquor. It's not that...
You think he's been drinking.
Yeah.
Right. But don't they say specifically at the end, oh, he was actually...
Yeah. So the way that he dies is that he drowns himself in liquor. But from his point of view, he doesn't think he's drinking.
Sure. But I'm just saying, in terms of the movie being like a guy named Hennessy literally drowned in liquor...
As Alanis Morissette would say, it might be ironic.
It might be ironic.
And we would all say, nah.
I don't think you understand the word.
Unfortunate, it's not ironic. Going off of that, let's talk about Balthazar for like 2 seconds.
Gavin Rossdale, he's not asked to do very much. Like, I think he does fine with what
he's
little...
He's not, although I can't remember which one of you guys said this, but I agree with it, where his moment where he's sort of like taunting Constantine, being like, when you get down to hell, be finger-licking good... It's almost a moment that should be gayer than it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes off as, it's not gay enough.
The dialogue makes
because
it feel like it is.
Sort of becomes, well, it's like trying to be gay, but he landed on, like,
just a chicken metaphor.
Actually wanting to.
To, like, eat him.
Which, by the way, that's fine
but
if you're a demon. I get that.
And that's fine
but
if you're a gay person
been,
you want to eat someone.
Sure. Gay
you all
animals,
done it.
We accept you.
It should have been like a demonic psychosexual thing.
Yeah.
It should have been like...
I feel like there should have been like even...
Just, yeah.
So, then,
yeah.
So then here's my big question, because I think I was saying this when we were watching it together. Is that Gavin Rossdale's fault or is that the writing's fault?
No, it's the writing. I also think that like... The director
finger
told.
Good is not a line.
Yeah, it's not a sexy line. I also, it seems like.
He sort of plays it half sexy.
It seems like the director or Gavin Rossdale, like either he was told to or of his own accord, he decided to sex it up, and no one told Keanu Reeves that that was a choice that he was going to make. So Keanu Reeves just reacts with like the flattest, emotionless response to it, and the other person is clearly trying to play something, and
sure.
Keanu Reeves is just not getting it.
Also, it has to be said that. In the comics, obviously, Constantine is, like,
bi.
Yeah.
In this movie, he's
not addressed.
Functionally asexual.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because he actually displays, like...
No interest.
Aversion of any sexual interest.
Yeah.
Well, and on no failure of part on Rachel Weisz's character, Angela, who is throwing herself at him.
He is actively uninterested
in
Rachel. In fact, doesn't she, like, semi-disrobe and she was like, don't get any thoughts or something? And he's like, like,
I don't remember.
There's the one time that he has, like, a line, but it comes off as a not at all sexual innuendo joke, is when she's like, do I have to take all my clothes off? And he just sort of stares at
me. Oh, that's right.
And it seems like the joke for him is like, it'd be funny if I made a chick all of her clothes off for no reason. Not because he wants to see her naked.
Yeah.
But I'm not interested.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
But it seems like he's not interested in seeing her body.
No, it
just
seems
like
it would be fun. Like, yeah, he'd think it would be hilarious.
I think we should touch on this a little bit. Leah said before that she has a difficult time gauging chemistry between actors. But as a trioite, can we determine... What was the chemistry level between Rachel Weisz and Keanu Reeves?
I think even Lee, like, noticed at this, that there's just, like, nothing there.
Well, again, like, you pointed out that you didn't catch it the first time, but when you watched it the second time in the end, the way that scene goes is that he sort of leans...
He's going to pick up the spear.
He leans down, and she thinks that he's going in for the kiss, but he was going for the spear the whole time.
Yeah, and so, like, she goes up to try and kiss him, and he's just, like, not even notices, like, right
and
past
her. Clear indicator. And also, in the end, like,
she's leaning into him.
Going so close to his face, and he's just like...
He's just like,
Are you going to leave
it's,
now?
Yeah. It's like 10:45.
Yeah, I got
right.
stuff.
The bus isn't going to run for
listen,
much longer.
I understand... Lee.
I'm into it.
You're into it because that makes him an asexual character.
For me, it's refreshing to see a character that is like, that has Rachel Weisz in front of him and is like, nah, I'm not into
and
it.
Would you agree, just even as an asexual, Rachel Weisz is a beautiful woman.
Yeah. I mean, no, she looks great.
Yeah.
But
I think Keanu Reeves is very hot.
I would also put in, guys, I just don't think Keanu Reeves had chemistry with her, period. Like, even, I think, I personally believe
how many times
movie...
has Keanu Reeves had chemistry with anyone?
Yeah, but do you think that he...
Good point. I mean...
I'm sorry. Aside from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
No, but I mean, like, Carrie Ann Moss, where they're both kind of cold actors playing cold people.
I guess.
Was Keanu Reeves ever trying? Because, like...
Yeah.
I think he was.
I don't know.
I don't think he was.
I really don't know.
I think this is where we disagree.
Well, actually, this is kind of... Okay, we need to finish up characters, but I'm just going to put a pin in this one to say, this gets into direction for me, which is going to be right after this. But we're just going to move on. Into Keanu Reeves' character.
Yeah, I think he died. I've said this to Brendan when you weren't here, that for my money, if you had someone write a better Constantine movie or TV show, I would prefer... I have not seen the TV show with other
people. I hear it's good, though.
But I still want my 2005 Keanu Reeves
really?
To play this Constantine.
Really?
Yes.
He
really
so charming.
I like the tall, skinny, dark-haired, low voice, very little emotion... gruff Keanu Reeves.
But there's nothing to it.
I agree with him.
Well.
Yeah, I agree with you that he does like the sarcasm
really
and dry
like,
humor
a
well.
He's sitting across from midnight and he does this really good style of like, thanks for the history lesson.
But do you think he does that because he's actually good at that or just because he's so fucking flat?
I think Keanu Reeves is good at some things.
Yeah, I think frankly, for that, for the purposes of this character, it's irrelevant whether or not he's doing it because it's good or because he's, you know,
yeah, that's
flat. Like, it doesn't matter because it's how it reads.
I think he does John Wick. I think we all agree that he turns in a good performance in John Wick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that that's all he needs to do.
The role of John Wick is undemanding.
Well, it was literally written for him.
I know.
Right.
But I think that Constantine need not be more than a slightly elevated John Wick.
That's
like,
fair.
I think that possibly the...
I disagree.
I think that possibly the comic version of him and the one that is in the TV show is a bit more Han Solo
involved.
Would be.
Yeah.
Like, a bit more actively charismatic. But
I
don't want him to be.
I do.
I want him to be gruff. I want him, like, he's more like a noir detective in this, where he's like,
but see, there's
like,
where I'm disagreeing with
deadpan.
You, because
I think he's really good deadpan.
I think if he was going to be a really effective noir detective type, he would have some personality.
I don't know.
Any
I think a lot of noir detectives are very flat. They're sad characters because they've had some tragedy in their life, and they're just sort of like going through the motions at this point. And I think that's really what he's doing here. Yeah. I don't think most... Yeah, most
more... One
more
note about Keanu
Reeves.
Go,
one of my favorite shots in this movie, that I think it's intended to be humorous, by the way, is when he's, like, holding the cat, and it's like, in a bucket of water, and he's like, I need you to leave the apartment. And she's like, okay? Like, understand what the fuck is happening? And, like, she goes to the door, and, like, she's about to close the door, and she just turns back, and just Keanu Reeves is just, like, expectantly staring at her, like, with his feet in the bucket of water,
holding
the cat.
Yeah.
And just being like, when are you going to close the door? And it's my favorite shot in the movie.
It's great.
Yeah.
Just like...
It's hysterical.
He doesn't have to do anything but sit there, and it's the perfect shot.
If we can just branch off that, Rachel Weisz's character, Angela.
I think she's terrible.
Yeah.
But I don't blame her if she didn't want to try.
She's not trying.
I like Rachel Weisz, and I think she can act, and I think she just decided not to.
Yeah.
Well, but would you also take away that she's handed the script, she has the role...
Bad.
She's probably not inspired, right?
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be.
We've talked about before how there are some actors who can take a nothing script and be really good, and there are other ones who will just be like, burp, and like, just not even try.
She's out.
And she just wasn't trying.
I think Tilda Swinton tried.
She for sure fucking
did. Is there anything else you want to say about Rachel Weisz?
Not
or can
really.
We just go great?
Yeah.
Let's go to
Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Tilda Swinton as Gabriel, which I'm going to put this out there,
it's
the second most perfect casting in this
movie.
She
is the other MVP.
Aside from the one we're about to get to. My only complaint is there's not enough. Like, that character demands more screen time.
She has two scenes, and the first scene is just
from,
a really, like, nonsense conversation.
All of the bad things in this movie, she needs to be in more scenes.
Yeah.
But not only that, but I actually found her performance as this gender androgynous, I don't fucking care what that script says, that's a conscious choice to cast her.
No, it is. I'm just saying, like, I'm not being... The only thing I want to drive home is that I'm saying she because I'm talking about the Swinton. I'm not talking about Gabriel.
Yeah, no, and I say Gabriel's he because that is what they say in the script.
Sure. But I would say, I think Tilda Swinton does a great job with the role.
No, I
in
think,
the
yeah.
two scenes that she's given,
yeah.
I actually think she brings this, like, weird naturalistic element to it where I, like, which is a crazy thing to say in this movie, which is, I would classify it as intensely mannered. This very sort of, like, worldly, seen it all,
yeah, but then
still,
also,
like,
in
insanely devoted.
Incredibly unhinged.
Yeah.
But in a way that I find to be very watchable.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, I like in the I like her last scene where she's like, "You're doing it!
Yeah.
You're finally a good man."
Yeah.
She's like with her like
bleeding, bleeding mouth.
And
yeah.
Then she just, like,
and bleeding mouth.
Yeah.
And then she just walks back into the pool.
Yep.
Listen, like, I know that after Doctor Strange, Tilda Swinton caught a lot of flack. Setting that aside, I think her performance is quite good
I
in
think
this
she's
movie.
Good in Doctor Strange as well.
Yeah, I think she's good in pretty
yeah.
much everything. I mean, you can get into the argument about whether or not, you know.
Whether or not that should have happened
yeah.
is up for debate.
Yeah.
But as an actress, I love Tilda Swinton. I think she turns in a top-notch performance no matter what the movie is.
Yeah, in this movie, there is a lot of flat, very straightforward acting, the sort of acting you might expect to see in the sort of movie. And then there's Tilda Swinton, just like doing her weird Tilda Swinton thing. And she's so magnetic, which is great because she's an angel.
Mm-hmm.
She's an androgynous angel, and you should be like constantly like looking at her, and like you should be paying attention to her when she's on screen.
The hair, the
yeah.
face.
Yeah.
I would even think the way that she like held her body was really interesting. I thought she actually brought more effort to this movie than was maybe deserved.
Oh yeah, 100%.
As a note, Balthazar and Gabriel are two characters that were very nicely placed in cast.
Yeah.
Mm.
If you were going to have an actual bisexual Constantine, because they're both very
yeah.
comfortable and both very like queer.
I well, actually
very
yeah.
And especially, I think those choices were very conscious, in my opinion.
Which, to be fair, if you were doing the scene where he was kind of flirting with Constantine and calling him finger looking good, but maybe not that in the movie we're doing,
right.
like it would be something more to play with if you had the idea that Constantine was bi. In the movie, as you said, he is functionally asexual.
Yeah.
He could be bi, he could be straight. I don't know. Yeah.
Like anyone in
yeah.
movie.
Well,
dealer's choice.
Actually, no. He likes no one in this
yeah.
movie. However, I do think that was a conscious choice, perhaps, because Tilda Swinton is an obvious choice to play an androgynous character across the line.
I think
even,
it was, yeah.
Even when this movie was made and that was maybe less of a thing, Orlando had already come out. We already know Tilda Swinton can do that.
Yeah.
So I think those were very conscious choices to play these sort of fluid characters.
Yeah, but not to give the movie too much credit, they for sure were never going to have anything actually happen.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It was, but I
what
think,
I
know,
what I would like to believe is
it
that
was the safe choice for not to do it and not
yeah.
talk about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I would like to believe is like the casting director had these like inspired ideas, but then like overall the movie was like, but no.
Oh God.
So going off of that, let's go to Peter Stormare as
Lucifer
Morningstar. I would actually say
canonical.
He is the fucking MVP of this movie. He's
I mean,
so
is,
good.
He if we're not talking about the DC character on my beloved Fox TV show.
Sure. We're putting that aside by the
yeah.
way, because this is a completely
yeah,
different interpretation.
It is like he elevates the movie for a solid 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, and it actually goes back to I think Brendan mentioned is he why you only remember the ending?
I don't know if we covered this actually on here, but what I remember, I saw this movie years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing...
Cancer out?
Yeah, the only thing I remember is the opening scene with the demon in the mirror and the scene at the end where Lucifer pulls the cancer out. I don't remember anything about Peter Stormare from that. I just remember the ending. So to answer your question and to poke a hole in your theory there,
sure.
No, that's not why I remember the ending. But if I had, that would have been a good answer, wouldn't it?
Because, would you guys agree, Peter Stormare's performance is amazing?
Yeah, it's
yeah.
weird and unhinged, and it's, like, again, it's very, like, weirdly... There's a lot of, like, licking and, like, sticking his face right in Constantine's face.
And there's a lot of, like, weird, like, cocking of the head,
yeah.
and he, like, breaks his voice in these completely strange and unexpected places. I thought they were just like, Peter Stormare, do your thing.
I don't know.
Did.
I think I told Brendan, I don't think that they wrote any lines for Lucifer.
It's just, like, react.
Yeah, just come out and say some stuff. My favorite bit is where he asks for Isabel to be released.
Oh, yeah.
And she goes like, fine.
Yeah. Well, it's like even more eroding because he's like, it almost looks
yeah.
bad. He's like, fine.
It's
like, there he goes like,
yeah. It's such a great anti-climax.
Yeah.
But I feel like Peter Stormare knew it. I think he played
it. Oh, yeah,
100%. The one detail about him I liked, and I looked this up to be sure I was right about this, his feet were always covered in that black,
like oil.
Gummy
yeah.
mud.
Yeah.
Because they wanted, in this movie, Lucifer to only be able to walk upon, like, pollution and corruption. So that's why his feet was always covered in mud, and that's why they specifically showed his tracks across the hospital floor.
Oh,
were, like,
okay. That's
black.
Kind of neat.
I know, that,
I like
a
that.
Cool touch. But also, Peter Stormare fucking owned this role, and
yeah.
He was great. I mean, we can just fill in the blanks here, but I guess the last one is really like Shia LaBeouf?
Oh, Shia LaBeouf?
I think he does his usual Shia LaBeouf,
yeah.
He does it well.
Like, gosh!
Yeah. That's,
I want to be a badass!
I'm not really sure that's what Shia LaBeouf does, Chris. Go!
In Streetwise, little New York.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, smarmy.
Smarmy.
I don't know about Streetwise.
No, he comes off as like a smarmy,
yeah.
Impetuous kid.
He's
like
impetuous. And
he knows his
shit.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you gotta take like a.
Yeah, you gotta
cross.
Find that magic cross. You have
and
one of those magic crosses?
Yeah, make it rain, maybe.
Yeah. Make it rain.
That's literally what he says.
His only scene that I really enjoy was face in the mirror being like, yeah, Chaz last name. Certified badass.
I did not care for his character. I
think his character is
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, no,
I think his acting is.
Thank fun. God for the beef, but I don't care for him in this movie so much.
I honestly don't like him as an actor very
I think
much,
he's fine.
I
don't have anything
against
him.
Can we just talk very briefly about the post-credits stinger scene?
Oh,
yeah.
He is
an
suddenly
angel.
An angel?
Yeah.
Well, what about it?
Like, how and why?
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Yeah, well, how and why, and also, what did you
There's
think
There's a
about
theory
that
he was always an angel. That theory is wrong.
Yes,
yes, it's
I agree.
Completely wrong. But anyways, I mean, as a threesome, and typically the three of us will disagree with three different opinions on a thing, I think we all agree, the idea that he was an angel the whole time is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, it's 100% bullshit.
Just how does he like it? Anyway.
Yeah.
But the fact that he becomes an angel is a real wrench that they in the world that you've decided on where angels are half breeds.
Right.
So I think like
and he's wearing the same outfit as Gabriel
yeah.
at the end.
I think if you didn't have the stupid rule that angels are half breeds, then he could very easily have become an angel.
Yeah.
But I also don't think that it was earned. I don't think
no.
he put
yeah.
enough time as lovable assistant to be
yeah.
so missed.
Yeah.
His screen time, I would say, would total 10 minutes in this
Well,
movie.
He doesn't, again, and like we said when Lee was reading the synopsis, he doesn't come into the plot until the very end.
No.
Not
and it also, to me, it's does it imply then that people can become angels when they die? That, like, people do become angels when they die?
I don't see why that can't be a thing, but the movie doesn't. It puts
yeah.
the movies on the movie.
Yeah, it does.
To no effect, really. Like, it's not to a tantalizing effect. It's not to an interesting effect. It's not a twist. And this movie was never picked up for a sequel, so it's not as if we
Well, they didn't know that
further.
At the time, I'm sure.
I think I think what it all
no.
came from, not to excuse it, but to possibly explain, is that probably all of these characters are Constantine characters, and they were like, we gotta have we
well,
gotta
see,
fill this man.
I did
to
like,
hit
yeah.
the marks.
I did
yeah.
look him up, and he is based off of a character named Chaz, who is not very similar to this. Like, he's
yeah.
much older than Constantine.
There is a
comics.
Character,
yeah.
Chaz
so it's like an
in-name
only?
Chaz
yeah.
is in the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Someone was telling me about him.
Yeah, it's a different interpretation. He doesn't die. He's much older. Like, he's a little more grizzled.
Do we have anything else you want to say about this movie?
Why was the Spear of Destiny in Mexico?
Who knows? It was a Nazi
wrapped
flag.
In a
yeah.
Nazi flag,
how
which is supposed
Mexico?
To imply...
Yeah,
it's a Mexican.
Exactly.
Well, which what I think that was meant to imply the whole idea of, like, Nazis
well, they,
fled
yeah.
to South America,
yeah,
I
but,
guess.
But that's still quite a distance
yeah,
from South America.
Extreme distance.
To walking distance from Los Angeles. I know, again, he
it's
was possessed by a demon. Anyhow, that's my last thing.
It's almost like no effect, really. It's that was really just a lot of set dressing to get him to there.
By the way, this is definitely not what it was, but do you think it was like some discreet message about illegal immigration?
Yeah, probably.
Because he had to go from Mexico.
Well, he does jump right over that fence.
If only he had a wall,
yep.
he wouldn't have had that spear of justice.
Actually,
gross.
No, they showed him jump over a fence. Like, there's a fence with barbed wire, and he's just like, ba-doop!
Oh my god.
It's actually, showing the hypocrisy of a wall.
Yep.
All right, well,
demons are still going to come to Los Angeles, whether or not you build that wall.
Who would like to start with a fix?
Yeah, I'll do it. First off, the lung cancer subplot goes. I like the lung cancer subplot. As I said earlier, it is one of the only things I remember about seeing the movie the first time, and I think it's really neat. That said, I want it to go because it's bigger when you know and care more about the character and can devote more time to his focus on mortality.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a great idea for a sequel, but it's not something I want in this one. Also, Chaz is cut because, as we said, he really does not serve much of a purpose. I think in terms of doing things toward the end, Papa Midnight could take over some of his role. Like, he could be like, fuck it, I've been neutral for too too long, and this is clearly not working. Anyhow, there's no twin sister, just Angela, who is a devoted Catholic. She's not a nun, but she works in a church or, you know, in some sort of religious-affiliated thing.
Mm-hmm.
We find out secretly that she has the Spear of Destiny, which was entrusted to her by the previous priest before he died at the hand of Mammon in an attempt to destroy it, as the spear can pierce and kill a god. Mammon needs a pure woman who believes to bore him into the human world. There's going to be more debate in this version, as that thing I brought up earlier about believing versus knowing, and how, like, you know, believing in God is something different from knowing that God is there. Gabriel has more to do and seems like a convincing good guy, which, because Gabriel has only two scenes in this movie, you get none of that anyway or the other. Like, you don't have enough to care. Constantine entrusts Gabriel to protect Angela in the church. Gabriel reveals that he's in league with Mammon because he's sickened by God's forgiveness of humanity and just wants to rid them all. To prevent Mammon from becoming born, Angela stabs herself in the stomach with the Spear of Destiny, destroying Mammon and killing herself via suicide. This whole rigmarole prompts Lucifer to pop up and be like, hey, what's going on over here? Constantine offers to slit his wrist and give himself to Lucifer in exchange for sending Angela to heaven instead. Lucifer agrees and Constantine does the deed. God shows up and stops Lucifer from taking Constantine to hell and has a nice talk with Constantine about how he can ascend to heaven through faith. Constantine says, what the fuck have you been doing? Why should I have faith in you when you just show up at the end? I don't have any faith in you. God says if he doesn't have faith, he can't go to heaven. So he returns Constantine to life to see what he will do with himself and takes Angela with him to heaven. As a last note, he kicks Gabriel out of heaven and leaves. The end credits after scene, we see Gabriel kill Lucifer with the Spear of Destiny and take his place as the first of the fallen in hell, sets up the threat for the sequel. Bada bing, bada boom.
Shit, done. That's good.
You're welcome for Googling for some...
I had actually heard of it because I was doing some Googling of...
Of your own?
Of Gabriel earlier, yeah, because I wanted to see what his deal was.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Yes. I'm keeping the lung cancer plot. I'm getting rid of everyone of the sidekicks except for Chaz and Gabriel. So I'm thinking that Gabriel is the sort of like heavenly liaison that Constantine has because, you know, when you are banishing demons, you're going to want to have probably like an angel to talk to be like, I did this XYZ, you might want to like follow up on these leads, blah, 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 blah. And so they probably do business together. And I don't know that it's so much of like, hey, I need you to figure out how to get me into heaven. I think that there's probably like a sort of camaraderie between them. But like Gabriel is sort of mentor slash coworker slash like consultant for Constantine.
Okay.
And Chaz is full-blooded, like, devoted sidekick, assistant, apprentice guy. And that probably, there's a reason for his devotion. And I don't know what that is, but I don't really want to get into it, but there is a reason for it. And I'm keeping a lot of the same shit. I think the same basic plotline, but just simpler, that, like, Angela, they need her to... Mammon needs to possess her. The Spear of Destiny needs to cut her open. I'm not going to have the Spear of Destiny be in Mexico. It'll be just somewhere reasonably accessible. And I'm keeping Gabriel as the villain. I actually think if you could do it better, I like the idea that Gabriel has reached a point where he is so far gone that he just thinks that like the only way to shine the light on humanity is to bring the night, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible way of putting it, but like
I gotcha.
Basically like to bring out the good in people, he has to like, you know, bring about the end of days. And what I want to focus on is that thing I talked about earlier where Constantine is desperately seeking or hoping that God will forgive him, but it's not really the forgiveness of God that gets him redeemed. It's his own. So there's this idea in Lucifer, the TV show, that I don't know if it's the same in Lucifer DC, that people are not, like, Lucifer or whoever's in charge of hell does not decide who goes to hell. It is your own sense of guilt that makes it and puts you in hell. So
mm-hmm.
even if on the surface you do a crime and you think you're okay with it, if you truly feel, like, guilty for it, you will go in hell. And it is your own guilt that keeps you there and forces you to relive the actions that you did that led you there over and over again. And the doors are not locked that you could get out of hell if you could ever overcome that guilt, but no one ever does. That's
yeah.
why they're in hell for eternity. And so I like that idea, and I like the idea that it is Chaz's faith in Constantine that ultimately makes him see that he is redeemable. And so I think part of the ending is that Gabriel, you know, proves that he's fallen from being an angel and that Chaz still dies in the process of saving and Chaz is elevated to, like, replace Gabriel as, like, as the angel.
That's cool.
That's cute.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. That's what I would do.
So my fix on things is pretty similar to Lee's in a way. My main complaint with this movie, just in terms of how it's put together, is that Gabriel's plan is not really alluded to at all, and Gabriel as a character is barely present in this movie aside from, like, the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
So in my fix of this, Gabriel is much more present for the entire plot. My idea is that this is much more explicitly a supernatural kind of celestial noir, that Constantine is sort of the leg man for Gabriel in a way. Gabriel, I'm sort of going to merge roles with Hennessy in terms of Gabriel is the one to sort of like pick out the murders to solve, to send Constantine after this to figure yada, yada, yada out. And that Gabriel is sort of manipulating Constantine to put this situation together in which Angela can be possessed by Mammon. There is no Isabella, because I find that to be extraneous. The Spear of Destiny, I would like to have I don't need someone to find it in Mexico and carry it up. I'm fine with it being maybe something Constantine finds as a part of a mission that Gabriel sends him on. That part I'm not so concerned about. But the thing I really wanted to correct here was Gabriel is a much more present character, just so it's not such a, oh yeah, that guy was here at the very end when Gabriel just literally drops in and explains everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also packs more punch if Gabriel is sort of a part of the team and then is a traitor to them. And it was like, I've been running this game the whole time. Hey, that's shocking in a certain way to the audience. So my fixes are basically make Gabriel a bigger character so that turn has more oomph. Also, explore this whole Mammon myth a little more. We only really get the story of that in one info dump.
Would you guys recommend this movie?
No.
No.
Yes!
I take it back. Yes, but I feel like the caveat I should put out there is, when I watched this movie again with you guys, it was a lot more boring than I remember it being.
I think I had a similar thought, but I still think, if you like the look of Keanu Reeves, this is... This is the look of Keanu Reeves. That is
If you're into Keanu, this is peak.
I think
Keanu
younger Keanu Reeves is a bit weird to be into at my age.
And older Keanu Reeves
is
for
a bit
sure.
Dark.
Yeah.
And I think he aged well, but I think this is his finest hour.
I agree with that. You did say when we were watching it together, you're like, isn't this a good look for Constantine? And
really
I was like,
is.
I guess.
Really into it. Really into the silhouette he formed for that suit.
So Brendan, you're still a no?
Yeah, again, aside from Peter Stormare and Tilda Swinton, there's just nothing I can really recommend seeking out in this movie, you know? Like, I can't think of a reason why you should watch it, so it's a no.
There's so many worse movies that we've watched, too.
No,
I
it's true, it's
that.
True. I think it's also just sort of dull. Like,
no,
aside from those
that
parts,
solid.
It's
that is
pretty
my
dull.
My major complaint is that I find this movie to be flat and dull, and I want more personality.
Yeah.
But weirdly, I would still recommend it, especially if you're someone who liked...
So wait, you was a no, and now you're a yes?
You was a no, and now you're...
I was, by the way, a maybe.
No, you said no.
Oh, did I?
Yes. Oh, you're really drunk.
No, it's not that I'm bad, but I'm conflicted, is what
okay,
I'm finding.
Sure, let's say that.
No, because I think it's legitimate how I felt about it before, and I felt it kind of more boring now. I think it's a valuable experience if you liked it when you were younger. See if it holds up now.
All right, so yes,
good,
maybe
yeah.
No.
Well, I think...
Yes, probably no.
If you did see it when you were younger, see it again. I think you'll find your...
No, I mean, you were a maybe, and I'm a no.
No,
I'm not saying you're a prop.
Yeah.
Chris, I'm telling Chris.
Yeah, Chris is a maybe.
Yeah.
Which isn't helpful, I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm especially... yes, and especially with this caveat, if you're into, like, a sexless protagonist...
Well, buckle up, Buttercup.
Look no further than John Keanu Reeves in this movie.
Truly sexless,
Constantine.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that's it, right? I mean, you guys can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, facebook.com/whywatchpodcast. You can find our website at www.drappack.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher, and you can rate us on there as well.
Please rate us.
Please.
We have some ratings so far, and we're into them, but...
I want more!
We want more. We're greedy.
More!
I don't know if there's like a heaven or hell way to buy this out.
Nope, it's after midnight. We're buying it out. Ready?
Bye.
Bye.